Everyone, welcome to the Deflation Made Easy podcast. Today is episode 15 and we are on part two of weaponized SaaS. What do you think about session, Ken? I think it was absolutely amazing. What did you think?
I always love talking about SaaS, Kate. I think they're always tend to be our most viewed sessions, tend to be our most collaborative sessions with the community. So, you know, I really enjoy getting on there and having an opportunity to talk that through with people and answer some of their concerns as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we identified the need for a part two, I suppose, because of the amount of questions that we were getting and that we didn't have time to answer. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we may even be queued up for a part three because of the how many additional questions we're getting on top of that. But, you know, it's always nice to talk about the specificities of SaaS because, you know, it's really a justification game, isn't it? So mm-hmm. I feel like there's so many different arguments that can be valid in the case of SaaS. So I thought it was a really useful session.
You're absolutely right. I think we, for the listeners, we'll try to populate all the questions that we had from part one. So we tried to give obviously some answers. Majority of the questions were more around any tips, anything around like housing, SaaS and tenants and any complaints and how we'll deal with it. And I think it's fair to say between me and you and obviously the audience that the conclusion that we came is all about communication. Mm. So everything comes down to the communication between organizations and the data subjects. But on that note, I will leave it to it. Have a good weekend and happy bank holiday.
Enjoy.
Bye. Weaponized SaaS. I mean, we have the first part of this podcast, and we had so many questions after that. In terms of like questions, in the sense like people coming to us and saying, actually, we're having these questions. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? So what we have, me and Ken did was to obviously gather all these questions and trying to talk a little bit about them. Please do unmute yourself and join us in the conversation if there is something that you're actually facing right now, or if you have any further questions or something that you would like to share with us for us to obviously as a community to discuss all together.
Absolutely.
So I kind of, and we were talking about this before, weren't we, in terms of like there were loads of questions around CCTVs, like in a sense of like SaaS and around CCTVs, what like can a CCTV footage be requested as part of the SaaS? Should that be and what is considered like reasonable and proportionate? Should we always consider when they ask for the personal data to CCTV footage be automatically under the request? I would say actually, like this is a very common question that I get. Like they are asking for the personal data, CCTVs. Everyone knows that we have CCTVs, so actually we should include them. I would say that this is definitely not part of, and it is not under like the reasonable and the proportionate effort from the data controller's perspective to actually just gather the information. Because one, you potentially don't have the timelines with you. You don't have like the times, you don't have the date. So if you do have one more than CCTV, and obviously we have the retention schedule probably for 30 to 90 days, but it would be unmanageable for you to do that. So unless they ask you directly and straightforward about the CCTV footage, I would say that I would not consider that in the first instance of a SAR.
Mm.
So that would be my perspective. I'm sure if you agree.
Well, yeah, to
be fair. Just make sure that we're
it's a fairly evident.
You're giving me like pulling your face, just like making sure you're on the same page.
No, absolutely. We had a few, I suppose, in relation to CCTV footage in the main, didn't we? We had a lot of conversations in that regard, and mm-hmm. a little bit in the first session as well about it, you know, about whether they're in scope and blah, blah, blah. And I know we largely spoke about the fact they will be in scope, but
yeah,
things like retention periods are of course going to pay such a huge part in what we can provide.
Yeah.
And, you know, it tends to be in the main. If they are being requested and we're holding it for longer, is probably in line with some kind of investigation, whether criminal or internal, which may even change, obviously, the provision of that personal data in light of mm-hmm. the SAR as well. Mm-hmm. It's, in a general sense, yes, it is in scope because we consider it processing under UK GDPR, but obviously there are always going to be rules and subsets around it. That doesn't then mean that we should be holding CCTV footage for ages and ages and ages.
Absolutely.
Just for a SAR, because of course retention still has to exist. And if we don't have it, then no need to try hold on to its provider.
I think on that, actually, in terms of, like, it came quite recently, and it goes aligned with Becky's asking, is we have, for example, imagine like a retention period of CCTV is for up to 30 to 60 days, imagine. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, something happened and we still have the CCTV footage even after the retention period. And there is a question that comes up from the police or data subject, etc., that asks for that footage that obviously goes beyond the retention period. What should we do? And shall we say, well, should we keep provide the footage and kind of saying, well, we actually did not respect it, unfortunately, like the retention periods because something happened? Or shall we say, no, we can't provide it to this because we do have the retention, like the retention schedule that states this, and we actually shouldn't have this on our side. Mm. And therefore, we are not providing to this. I would say that if you do have it with you, you should provide it.
Yeah.
So regardless of the retention period, particularly if it comes from a police on the investigation side of things.
Yes.
So I think it's like a balance, isn't it? Like, it's true that you have the principle and need to respect it. But if there is an investigation going on and you do actually have this data with you, you shouldn't even ask from the question, you should provide it. And then obviously keep it for investigation or claims perspective for longer, a little bit longer than the normal retention period. But I would say that, yeah.
Sure. Sweet. Should we kick off with a little bit of an interesting one? What tips do you think you could provide an organization in minimizing the amount of SARs that they receive? Now, I suppose at face value, I suppose on my end, is there's no real true way, is what I will say. And I think we shouldn't necessarily be making tools to minimize. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the burden on an organization is significant, but I think what I would say, and potentially hopefully what you agree with, Kate, is we've got to identify the root cause of these SARs and these rights requests and kind of work backwards from there and identify, maybe are we receiving copious amounts of SARs in relation to one service, or maybe in relation to if you're working housing rent repairs and updates in relation to what's going on with the property and, you know, fixing a leak.
Yes.
You know, does that then mean that maybe we should actually look at internally what our processes are like to sort of remove those conversations and the need to make a SAR for that purpose?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I presume you feel similarly.
I completely agree. I always try to make this like what obviously like the way I see SARs and any individual right is part of the, like, is a communication. It's literally based on communication. So I feel it is really important. And again, with Catherine Brooks is saying, is don't be afraid to have a conversation with the data subject directly, because I think exercising at any right is based on the communication. And sometimes, and particularly in our housing, I'm facing that and a lot. Sometimes the data subjects are just not satisfied with something that happened. If the respect claim or any repair that happened, anything, they are just not satisfied with service.
Mm.
And as we know, unfortunately, the ChatGPT exists. Normally, the advice that they get from ChatGPT is actually, you should ask for your personal data because it's part of your rights and you should do that, etc. But actually, what they are looking for is something different. They don't want the personal data. They don't, because obviously there is this misconception as well. We should have all the documents. No, you have only the right to your personal data, not the documents themselves. But I always advise to understand the root cause and understanding, actually, let's understand where is this coming from and why do you want their personal data? Because after a call with customer services, probably they just say, you know what, now I'm satisfied, or probably actually my question is more directed to customer service or complaints directly rather than data protection.
Yeah.
So I don't even want it. So I think it's really important to have a good communication with the data subject, being transparent, but as well being to explain.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important, like, to put like outside and say, well, actually, what we want is what we'll provide to you is your personal data. It's not business as usual information. It's not the documents. is your personal data, and we understand that you have this situation going on, etc. What are you looking for? Like, let's try to like demystify this. I think
absolutely. Great point. I think I'll just touch on Stella's comment. It's just a little bit of a question to us. Specifically in the realm of children's data, when it's held by mental care providers. In this instance, the child has been put in care and the mother is asking for their personal data surrounding their care and wants to see if the mother has any right to access that personal data. I mean, when we're looking at SARS in respect of parents and children and parents making SARS on behalf of the child, obviously there's a couple of things to consider. First thing, you know, are they of the age and capacity to provide consent? Obviously, if they are, then we operate on the children's words. If they're the legal age, and if they can also understand what they're providing their consent to, and then secondly, we tend to operate on the basis of one: do they still have parental responsibility? So, is there anything in terms of a legal document stating that they have a right to act in that regard and make decisions on the individual? Again, requesting stuff like that is probably quite vital, especially if they're in care and you're not really, or if you're not 100% certain of the circumstances. And then secondly, always acting in the best interest of the child. SARS relating to children should always be in their best interest. Obviously, the onus is on you to identify that slightly, but things like not having parental responsibility is obviously going to be quite a large factor in that.
No, absolutely. I think as well, actually, on the child's perspective, on the SARS, I mean, well, obviously, child's perspective in the SARS, I think it's always like when you say, well, we need to ensure that they have capacity to do this. Obviously, the assumption is like the direction normally tends to be the age. Mm-hmm. Well, you kind of have like there's a criteria to say yes or no. But I think it's a weird one as well, isn't it? Like, how can you assess, as in a data controller perspective, how can you say, well, we understand that you have a capacity, so we actually are refusing this on your side, and because we need children to come us to directly, or actually we are making the point, no, you have no capacity, we accept the parental rights and et cetera, and the parents to represent you. So I think it's a weird one, isn't it? It can be a little challenging because it's super subjective. How can you do actually the assessment in having a child having capacity, yes or no, to actually exercise their rights, isn't it?
Yeah, it does get really difficult when we are sort of teeing around children, and so especially where it relates to individuals who are making that on the behalf. And, you know, it does get really complex because even from this perspective of how do we even identify what is in their best interest and what isn't, you know, may not always be as easy as you think it is. And even sometimes where they have parental responsibility, the right is still a child at the end of the day, never the parents. So we've got to make sure that we are doing the best and putting them in the best situation possible to infringe their rights in any respect like that. Stella, I hope that answers your question in some kind of way. If there's anything that you'd like us to expand upon, just let us know, and we'd be happy to chat that one through if that's going to be helpful for you.
Giving a smile.
Good. Why? Well, the chat is dead busy, so I'll be trying my best to scour through them. But as I'm doing it, I'll ask Kate another question. Let her do her thing. So, Kate, what can organisations do to make SAR requests less broad due to AI making requests on behalf of individuals that are quite sweeping and obviously a big focal point of what we talk about when we discuss weaponized SARs?
Absolutely. I think, to be honest, regardless if it's regardless of the right, but definitely for the subject access requests more than any other, try to always scope, clarify the request. If you want all the personal data and you understand, obviously, from the way is the request is kind of written down or something like that, you understand from his AI perspective. But always try to scope it and to try to reduce as much as you can. Because again, you have always the as a data controller, what is expected from you from the ICO perspective to carry out what is reasonable and proportionate research, like in gathering the information. So you only can do that if you actually have clarified within your request. So if they ask for the personal data or the records that you hold for me or from 20 years of relationship that we have within your organization, it's true that they have the right to ask you, but you can always as well say, well, obviously, as you can imagine, you have a long relationship with us. The amount of data, the volume of information that we have from you is long and is complex, and it requires a lot of effort for us to gather all this information. So can you please let us know what, if you are looking for something specific, if you can give us like timelines, names, anything that you might be looking for. So I think the most important thing, even if in regarding the AI, yes or no, but obviously with AI thing, make sure that you clarify the request. Don't be scared to communicate with the data subject. Be back to them and make sure that you are clarified, because that will have a massive thing on your clock as well within your timelines, because you have the 30 days to like a month to reply to answer to your request, and then you can extend it obviously under some certain circumstances. So if you are not clarified, then you are wasting your time and looking for all this information, but then you need to anyway to do it regardless. I think you just do it as soon as you receive it. Because even your clock stops, your clock pauses while you are seeking for clarification. So actually, is a good tip. Don't do it just because you want to put the clock to be paused. Actually, do it because you need clarification and it's actually needed. But I think it's always a good way to do it.
No, for sure. It's all about like we're trying to satisfy an individual effectively in whatever it is they feel like they are upset about, or why they want to exercise this right. And, you know, I think sometimes people look at clarification of the scope as like a, you know, we're trying to like not make like, we're trying to make life easy for us, which maybe we are as practitioners in some regard, but we're also making life easier for the data subject.
Yeah.
Because do they want to siphon through years and years of personal data about them that quite frankly, they probably don't care about the root issue. There's always a root issue for a SAR, even if you're trying to be a nuisance. I imagine there's still some kind of smoking gun that they do want to find. And, you know, they don't want to look through realistically all these documents to find it, which are why I feel that correspondence in most cases is as beneficial as possible. You know, get out there, try to talk to them, clarify that scope. Again, as Kate said, Dua is now saying legally, as well as the ICO guidance, that we can stop the clock. So then we'll do so. It's a weird one, because sometimes you get people coming back and they're saying like, oh, well, you know, this is my request, I'm not changing it.
I'm stick with it, because actually that is my right. I have the right to have all the information that you have about me. Why are you trying to refuse it? Why are you trying to cope it?
But at the end of the day, you know, you got to try and do your best, and you got to do a reasonable and proportionate search at the end of the day. If that's not exactly what they want, then that's what our commissioner does exist for.
Exactly.
So they should
they
be
always
able
have
to
the
weigh
right
in
to
on
complain
that.
And exactly. Like coming back to you and saying, well, actually, you did not provide this information that I was looking for. And then actually gives you a route. So I think it's again, and I don't want to repeat myself, but that is as much as Catherine is saying, it's completely down to communication. So if you are be able to like to be transparent and obviously put outside your challenges and understanding what they are looking for, you even build like a trusty relationship and like potentially like creates a good relationship with the cost with the data subject. So it's actually good stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What I will do is I might read a bit less of the chat, because I can see that people are really asking questions, which is fantastic, because I think they're providing some amazing value to people.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. What I'm keen to do is to make sure that we answer the people's questions from the week before as well. So I'll do that. If anyone really, really wants to ask us something, I'm sure the amazing folks in the chat have answers just as good, if not maybe even better than ours. I'd like to say in some cases there's some really great folk in the chat.
But now I'm doing the question to you based on this. So we have one that is about repetition and repeated SARs. Will subjects submitting a repeated SARs once one is finished and they send another one, slightly different from the first, but how do you deal with this? Would you consider it as the same and then it will be repetitive, or...?
I've always kind of understood, and as well when we're looking at sort of the interpretation, the ICO's guidance in terms of what they may consider as sort of excessive, I always tend to look at it, if, you know, if there's new personal data, we would run it as a new SAR, typically.
Yeah.
However, you know, I'm always on the basis of, you know, give them a nice little one-off, you know, rerun the SAR if you can, if it's a good period of time has elapsed and it's not part of an internal review or something. But saying that if it keeps continuing and it's shorter periods of time, I would continue to provide what is new and what is relevant. And nothing kind of, if you feel like you're constantly providing the same kind of data. And, you know, I've seen cases in certain sectors where people kind of ask routinely, you know, they ask 1 month period, they ask in 6 month periods, yearly periods, and there's always going to be new data, hopefully, to provide.
Yeah.
If it's a long enough period of time, I would say that you would probably have to rerun the bulk majority of the SAR probably. Unless it's between really short snapshots of time.
Yeah.
Then if not, I would say it would just be anything that's elapsed from that time, anything new. So anything that they didn't receive in the last request, I would sort of be adding on to that. Unless it's like a year or 2 years, then I would probably take a view to do as much as you can effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say it, actually we have one of our clients where the was the housing and whether the data subject was coming back and forward, always like, I want to submit a SAR, and there was a week, it was 5 SARs within a month, asking always from the data. And we came to the point on the third, the SAR, we came back and say, well, unfortunately, we understand that we have a right. Obviously, we want to help you and we want to provide with all the information that you might help. But we understand on our point of view that you are actually disturbing and creating some harm to the organization, because we can't just run all these SARs within a month. We did 5. Mm-hmm. So definitely there is something going on here. And if you want to create, and if there is anything we can help you to help you, please let us know. But we will not do... and will not submit, like we will refuse this SAR based on this. So we actually did that. They complained to the ICO, and the ICO came back and said, well, obviously informed that this happened, but giving like the perspective, yes, they have the right, but yes as well, you were fine to refuse it because it was evidence that there was creating like some harm on our perspective.
Mm.
So it was interesting actually, because I'm using that now as my example. Actually, we have something from you saying that it's fine, so I'll use it.
Absolutely. It's an interesting point you made, Laura, about the request for internal review that seems to come immediately. That's a difficult one. I think you can obviously know from your experience that that's coming from AI. That's likely some kind of sort of way to continue to kind of weaponize that SATA, I suppose, is the term of the actual title of the podcast. What I would say is, if you feel like the points that they're making are sort of baseless and they're broad and they don't even relate remotely to what's been undertaken, again, if it's just this hasn't been done right, you might want to check the redactions potentially. What I tend to ask for if people complain is more specifics, if they have them. If they want an internal review of the SAR, I want to know why, because I want to know what I'm coming back on and I want to know what I'm clarifying. I'm not going to rerun the SAR for you just because you're not happy that, for example, communication hasn't been provided in relation to a witness statement. Tell me that and I'll respond to exactly why that hasn't been provided. If my initial correspondence didn't cover that clearly enough. I would probably approach doing something along those lines, is try really eke out the specific detail of what they're unhappy about, apart from like, I don't think the SAR has been done legally or anything like that. Try get enough so you can try to review those more quickly. And if you feel like there is a potential failing or there may be some truth in the matter, then go down the route of an internal review. But I'd probably try get to the bones of it as quickly as you can, if you can, because it's... it's not reasonable to be constantly running through internal reviews after a SAR, doing SAR after SAR after SAR. That's going to be a nightmare.
No, absolutely. You know, that you just remind me that we have actually is Katerina, the other consultant that is dealing with the Greek version, the better version. And she's dealing actually with this SAR request. And it was such a odd one. So basically the data subject came up and said that they wanted the personal data or everything. And then they actually asked for direct stuff, including drafts, emails, and first and second versions and third versions of documents. So they wanted literally everything coming from Junkbox, e-drafts, emails, first and final versions of documents and etc. So obviously there was a back and forward within the data subject, but I was quite intrigued because it was the first time that I dealt with this. I never saw like a data subject actually coming up with this situation because, and in these eyes, this is personal data held by me and it was a draft. So actually it was not a sent item. Mm. It was not like actually came, like went to someone else. It was someone that just drafted something and by whatever reason it was not sent. So why would should be this? Obviously it's not proportionate and reasonable, etc. But it's just like, I don't know. I've never dealt with this before. Actually, it's good to know that, well, as an evident purpose, that I've never dealt with this before. It was a quite interesting one.
Draft is a weird one, isn't it? Yeah. I never even thought about that in the grand scheme of things. I mean, the people.
But in the end of the day.
People keep drafts. I don't think I ever, like.
To be honest, I have so many drafts. But in the end of the day, if you think about it, is in within your email. So you actually, as an organization, we have that information. Is an email that can contain any personal data. So actually, is part of the what's is personal data and then the research and stuff. But I think that is mine in a sense of like, I did not send it for a reason. It did not came to like to yourself, for example. So it was not sent. So I'm able to change my mind if I did draw any comments or any opinions about someone else, et cetera, et cetera. But I did not send it to anyone. To be honest, how can I create that as something that happens? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's a strange one. Yeah.
I mean, I just kind of...
Interesting. Like, I like
I tend to get rid of my drafts, to be fair. Usually my drafts, it's one of two things.
I was about to say, delete your emails. Keep it with the retention schedule.
Do drafts fall part of the retention period for emails? I would guess so.
I think it's like it's definitely within the emails, but I would say that is a different thing. So I would say, for example, I had this conversation actually with this exactly client. We decided that for draft is exactly the same retention for junk box.
Okay.
Inbox. So it's 30 days. After 30 days, they delete everything and it's out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very rare that I go to send an email and then don't. Unless maybe sometimes I'm about to. Sometimes I feel like maybe if I get really into a topic, maybe I dive right too much and I get a bit too passionate. I think I'm gonna squash that down actually, because I don't want to terrify them actually. So that's probably the only drafts I have. Unless I'm not, I can say I actually check. But that is an interesting one.
Right.
I see too often.
I
suppose on the notes of like repeat requests.
Yes.
How do you feel about individuals acting in coordination with one another for the same organization?
To be honest, when I saw that question, I felt, wow, this is a very good one, because if we think about like that individually, I'm sorry, I'm just listening to my own voice and I must say that it's not the best. But anyway, if we think about that individually, every single person has their own right to actually submit a SAR. So they can do it. They can submit a SAR and they actually have the right to do it. However, we can understand if there anything happens, we can understand that obviously they are collaborating with each other and they are trying definitely potentially to create some harm and or trying to get some from the organization. I would give exactly the same thing, the same advice that we gave for individual ones. Try to communicate with them and understand exactly what is going on, how can we help you, and what do you intend with this subject access request? Because sometimes what they are trying to find is documentation, is trying to understand why did you make such a certain decision and what was your rationale, et cetera, et cetera. And that is not coming, the responses to it and the answers are not coming with the personal data that we are going to provide to you. Actually, probably will come from a customer service call, will come from the complaints route as well. So I would say that, again, try to understand why and go back to them without being like gathering any information and try to understand how can you help you without using a SAR as a weapon. Because in here, I feel that is the definition of a weaponized SAR. I would say that the collaboration between everyone and the coordination between like SARs and stuff, that's definitely a weaponized one.
As long as you can prove it, right?
Yeah. But I feel that's the That's the downside of things, isn't it? Like, how can we prove this? How can we say, actually, we know that you are coordinating like a SAR and you are working all together to actually cause some harm to us. We can't, we will feel it, and we can understand from like a point of view of like SARS, and potentially we have like some inside information, but it's very hard to prove, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm yet to see the ICO weigh in on it in any kind of substantial way. Obviously, it's probably not something I've actually seen before in terms of enforcement or anything that they've said. I mean, at least one of the good things that the STAIRS do is they made that distinction, don't they? In terms of individuals actually finding cooperation, which is nice. I think I think yet to see anything strong. You know what they can be like? They kind of like to sort of bounce around decisions at times, don't they? But I'd feel like that is a solid route to go down. I mean, you're not. I was going to say to be certain, and you know, as long as you are certain, I'm think I feel pretty comfortable that could be refused.
You are absolutely right. You actually, like when we were in the STAIRS event, and actually when we did the recording afterwards, you made that point. You made the point like, would it be so nice to actually have some similar situation and scenario within data protection, isn't it? Like in terms of like the legislator come up to us and say, well, if this happens, then you can refuse it. Even there was actually another topic that you said, it would be lovely to have the same thing with within the data protection. I don't remember actually what was it.
But you know what? There's a lot of stuff I like in the STAIRS in terms of like refusals. They don't call them exemptions and things.
Was someone being disrespectful?
Yes.
Yes.
Communicated in an abusive manner, I believe, is what the requirements say. I just like that. I think it's not fair that you know, occasionally you have to deal with the DPR has to deal with the most annoyed people. Nine times out of ten, they might be annoying to us, but they're annoying because they're annoyed. You know, the most frustrated people. Sometimes the most sort of mischievous people as well. You know, you deal with a wide bunch. Of people who, and unfortunately it's the DPO's job to kind of appease their concerns. So I would like something like that. I don't think the ICO would look at it that way, unfortunately.
I don't think so. No.
You know, I don't like the way they've spoken to me, so I'm going to refuse it. I could never see the ICO going, oh, you know, we agree with you there. But you know, that's
the bad days. We all have it.
Yeah, like I suppose it's one of those things. The ICO are probably used to getting showered at themselves. So they're probably like, well, if we have to do it, then so do you. But I mean, I suppose a note on the ICO. I suppose we haven't said it, have we? But the commissioner announced his stepping down, didn't he, this week?
Yes.
Yeah. I know that's just a bit of a random from SARS, but he announced he's stepping down from the role due to HR, due to a HR investigation, maybe not due to a HR investigation, but discussed a HR investigation in light and clearly in some kind of connection of him stepping down.
Yeah.
Awfully interesting stuff.
I do agree with that. I'm actually intrigued to see what will be the outcome of that.
Yeah, it is. I'm keen to understand what's gone on there.
Yeah, and actually on the HR note, we had a couple of questions as well related to employees as in an employment perspective and SAS submitted by former or current employees. And one of them were around internal emails. And now I'm quoting, most of our managers are not based in the head office, so we have emails, conversations with HR when dealing with staff issues. We generally exclude this and the content from the information, but then we provide, and I provide to the data subject because I believe it will be clear who wrote it, and we need to do the balance of rights of the requester. So basically what they're saying, summarizing it, is we exclude automatically internal emails because they know exactly who is mentioning and making like the content of the email, etc. So we automatically exclude them, making like the third party exemption and applicable here. And I think it's actually a very interesting question, you know, because not only because employment SARS is a reality, and unfortunately we all deal with it regardless of the industry in the sector, and they can be very tricky, obviously by from the nature, but when you are dealing with emails, and particularly when you are CC'd into the email, you know exactly who is involved within the email. And we need to make the distinction between his personal data, business as usual, but normally in the HR perspective, can be considered as personal data. But when you have an email, and now this is kind of like a question and like debating kind of thing, when you are in the email and you know for a fact that the data subject actually CC is copying to the email, so he already has it in principle in his site. What would you include those emails that is already included within the email so he knows? The first question. And second question would be, from these emails, and you have the assumption that regardless if we disclose or not the individual's names, would you like share the email? But at the same time as well, don't you feel that in your organization point of view, because of the how senior they are and the role that they're playing and the job role that they have, that by nature those should be disclosed? You know what I'm saying?
I feel fairly consistent in the fact that in what I'm saying, but I think there's an argument for I suppose loads of different arguments in that regard. I would say we've got to understand what the risk is to the business, potentially to other individuals, maybe to themselves, in disclosing that data that they've been privy to prior, especially if they are they've been an employee, depending at what level of an employee, you know, if they've been like a director, you know, on the board, really senior, up high in the business. One, is it going to be BAU anyway? And two, is the potential...
I say bow.
Bow. It's like a bow world. We just got to identify if there's a potential risk to the business in that, or to a third party in disclosing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, they might say, you know, I've been proved to it before. Only really off of best, not even really from any kind of anything in the law that we do that off of. It's more just like kind of being as transparent as possible in that respect. You know, if an exemption applies, it still applies even if they've seen it, right? You've got to kind of balance that and weigh it up, I think. Again, would they reasonably expect that certain content is in the email if they've seen it before? Well, yeah, probably. But again, if it's about stuff like management decisions and stuff like that that can have detriment to other individuals, then obviously there's potential for other exemptions to be in place. So I'd say, you know, take a risk-based approach. Just because they've seen it before doesn't necessarily mean it, but I would try your best to appease it where you can and absolutely provide it.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely
always the view I would be taking, is look at disclosure first and then look back and think, well, don't look back, you know, don't send it first. But once you've identified everything you want to disclose, then have a think in terms of like, okay, like they have seen this before. Is there any implication of this going out to them that is potentially problematic? But that's probably effectively where I'm at.
I actually seen a refusal on like in the HSR, and I saw the organization itself refusing to disclose the emails that the data subject were involved with the justification of you already have access to it because we're still a current employee. So he actually had still available the inbox. So they refuse it, saying, well, this is for us, it's disproportionate, it's not reasonable, it's disproportionate for us to gather information that you actually have access to. It's true that you have a right, it's true that we should provide with all the personal data that we held, but the fact that you are still a current relationship with us and you do have access to it, so therefore we are refusing on this regard. Initially, I was unsure. I did not feel comfortable, so I'll challenge that. But actually, if we think that about it, the fact that he's not a former, etc., he's like a current employee without still access to the inbox. In the end of the day, I said, you know what? Actually, I understand. I understand where you're coming from. I see where you're coming from. So
It's a really good key point you made. The disproportionate element is a wish, maybe something that the organizations would try. It's really hard. And to feel solid in your justifications when you're having to battle with AI, who's just incessant to try and play devil's advocate to every lingering word, and it's never right. It's like a thinly veiled kind of thing, but you know, we hope in the best of ways that hopefully the management of SARS will become an easier thing for you. We hope for these conversations that you are maybe continuing to by using the community to sort of help in the responses to those SARS. I suppose Aimless Plug Part 2, if you are struggling with SARS or any kind of rights request in that regard, then obviously DPP do offer outsourced SARS solutions, including CCTV redaction and SAR redaction itself. I believe we currently have an offer on Miles, is signaling to me right now, for 5% off as well.
Just gave you like a phobic vibe.
unless he's just wanting to give me a high five, which in that case, fair enough.
I think that's an amazing opportunity, actually.
Yeah, now we have a 5% offer. If we didn't have enough 5% offer on before, we do now, because I've just decided.
We're making the point now. So Matthew, if it's not the thing, sorry, Miles' fault.
But no, we definitely do. So if you guys do need any help with SARS, any advice with SARS, or you just want to chat it through with us, then please make sure you continue turning up to these sessions. Absolutely. And keep getting involved in the chat and reach out to us if you're unsure about anything, and we will do our very, very best to help you.
As always. And we are a nice bunch of people.
Yeah, we're
as well,
all right.
So
yeah.
We're always willing to talk. And on that note, are you saying goodbye, is it?
Maybe. Do you have anything you? I know we're over, but is there anything that you want to add on?
Dead. I could see from the chat that he's absolutely on fire. That we definitely need to have a part three. I would say that. But on that note as well, there is a last question that I would like to just to make, and obviously it's part of his eighth question. That what I'd like to do is, how can an organization prove that they don't hold something if they are challenged repeatedly for not having included something in the disclosure? And I think this is happens a lot, doesn't it? Like, you did not include this, you did not include that. I know that you have it. I know that we have it. We have, and this is our completely like our defense kind of thing, wall is our retention schedule. We do have a retention period. We do have a retention schedule. And those, well, your backup would be, well, that information is within our retention periods. And obviously, like, the retention period comes to an end and we have made deletion, anonymization, et cetera. So we are not holding it anymore. And this is as far as it goes. Never forgetting that they have obviously now with the right to complain to you, but they can go back to the ICO. And then the ICO can make all the necessary diligence to make sure that you actually not selling anything. But you don't need to prove them. You just need to say that you don't have it. And obviously this is being actually true. And obviously backing you up potentially with your risk and such casual. And if they are still not satisfied, they always have the right to lodge the complaint before the ICO. And we will see from that. I'm not sure if there is anything else that would add from there. If you don't have it, you don't have it. You know what I mean? Like,
they're still going to argue with you.
Thing with them. Yeah. You know, with the orders from like Amazon and stuff, like when they ask you, can you take a picture of proving that you did not get the order? What you want me to prove? You know, I'm like, I feel like a photo from the floor and like empty.
My dad ordered a bike from somewhere once and it didn't arrive.
Yeah.
And they sent, he was like, can you send proof that it didn't arrive? And he just put his bike helmet on and he sent a picture of him just like looking sad. He's just like, I've not got it.
It's such a like a pointless thing. He's like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah, I mean, it is. How do you prove what you don't have, right?
I always a photo of the floor and like with a like bad thing, like yeah, but
it's one of those, isn't it? I've never been unfortunate enough to not have a package arrive. To be fair, they used to get nicked a lot, but I think that's just where I grew up. They used to leave them like out on the other picture that they're there, and you look out on the front door, and you're like, oh, they're gone.
Oh, well, another day.
We'll try again tomorrow.
I would say on that note then.
Okay, fine. On that note.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
You know, we absolutely love talking with you, and we hope that our lovely community, which it seems like they haven't been super helpful in answering all your questions. If there's a question that we didn't manage to get to, then please let us know.
Absolutely.
Drop us a message directly or an email at info@dataprotectionpeople. Sounds like we will be doing a part three. So happy days, because we love doing yeah, SARS sessions anyway. So we hope you all have a lovely, lovely long bank holiday weekend. Enjoy free comic book day for the folks that are going down and getting free comic books.
Yeah.
And happy May the 4th.
Happy weekend, everyone.
Happy weekend.
Thank you very much.